Got one open phone line segment now for our Pratt Injury Lawyer phone lines. I want to kick off this hour. Soprano Caleb gets in. So let's give my wife a birthday shout out. I'm not going to say how old she is, but still waiting on her baby girl to arrive any day now. Man, can you imagine how excited it would be? Maybe it could come today. Carly, if you want to go ahead and go in labor today, you can share your birthday with your daughter. Now, that'd be pretty cool. Been listening forever, and I just want to say I hope it is a pretty good birthday for you. And what Caleb didn't tell me was if she was from Missouri or not. Hey, Carly, birthday girl. Have a great birthday. Great luck with the labor and the delivery, and hope it's going great for you. Awesome stuff. Carly made it through the heat of summer carrying this little angel, so good stuff there. All right, we've got people trying to get on the scumbag poll. Texture 5127, number 5, Rick Pitino. Bobby Pitino, number 4, Rick Pitino, number 3, Lane Kiffin, number 2, Will Wade, number 1, Pete Golden. I've got no problem with that.
That's a fantastic grouping.
I've got no problem with that.
I've got 8 total.
All right.
And every single one of those 5 are on there. I haven't ranked them yet.
I wish we could talk about something good, too. We can. But let me just say this, too. To be fair and to be principled, I don't like the fact that Dylan Hunter's coming back to Clemson. Hunter, you had your senior day. He signed a pro contract with a German second division team in July. That means you're a professional. Sorry. You signed the contract. You're a professional. You don't come back. And I know when he signed it, he didn't know he'd be eligible. But sorry, man. Like, I just can't do it. So, started 35 games last season, 7.5 points a game, 3 assists, 3.7 rebounds, shot 34.7% from 3, 78.6% from the free throw line, 1 steal per game, 134 games, 39% from the field, and last roster spot for Dylan Hunter coming back to Clemson basketball. Don't like it. Sorry. Don't like anything about it. Don't think he should come back. Don't you think he should allow him to come back? Don't agree with the judge's ruling. Don't like it. 654-ROAR, 654-7627. So we got 2 starting quarterbacks that were named yesterday. Florida is going with Anthony Filo. Anthony Filo comes over from Georgia Tech. He comes over with Buster Faulkner. Faulkner leaves Georgia Tech to become the new offensive coordinator for John Sumrall down at Florida. And they take Georgia Tech's future quarterback, and now he's the current quarterback. Anthony Filo has had a really good career so far. Now, he played behind Haynes King. Haynes King going to make the squad over there with the Panthers? I know he's hurt.
Can he make it? I'm not sure if he's healthy yet. I would say he's probably not, but he did not appear in the second or third game for the Packers.
All right, let me give you this for Anthony Filo. 59 of 102 for 938 yards. I don't like the 2 touchdowns and 3 picks. But last year in the game he played in, Gardner Webb, 21 of 28 for 373, a touchdown and a pick. 6'1", 207 from Bogart, Georgia. A guy that broke Trevor Lawrence's passing records in the state of Georgia. I like Anthony Filo. I mean, Aaron Filo. Like you said, Anthony Filo. Aaron Filo. I like Aaron Filo. Filo Beto is what you ought to call him. It is going to his redshirt sophomore season. I don't know if we have redshirt sophomore season. I'm sorry. Who knows what these guys are? There's no more red shirts. There's no more sophomores. This is 5. He's in 3 of 5 or 2 of 5 or something. He's in 3 of 5. That's what he is. True freshman, though, guy that played high school last year, Faison Brandon will be the quarterback at Tennessee. He beat out George McIntyre, who was a redshirt freshman there. Now, we'll say this about Tennessee. As Tennessee Duke and I talked about the other day, Kid's got a lot of upside. Hadn't played college football yet. Starting a true freshman quarterback at the SEC seems like disaster. He's a great player. Is he ready yet? I don't know. Well, let's see. With that said, Tennessee's good in a lot of spots now. You look up and down that roster, and there's a lot of good-looking talent up and down the roster. And so if he just comes in and doesn't lose games early in his career, then it'd be pretty doggone good, I think. And what Tennessee Duke correctly says is that every quarterback who ever plays in the system, for the most part, plays well. He's got Mike Matthews, and he's got Braylon Staley, and he's got DeShaun Bishop. They've got some pieces now. Got a good offensive line up there ahead of them now. They've got some pieces. So, Faison Brandon, which doesn't it feel like it should be Brandon Faison rather than Faison Brandon?
Maybe Brandon Faison was already taken.
Faison Brandon beats out McIntyre George. Just kidding, George McIntyre. My buddy gets in and says, I don't like the Dylan Hunter thing. I don't see how it's different from what LSU is doing. It's a little bit different in that Dylan Hunter didn't go play there. He signed a contract but never played. A little bit different. LSU, these guys have been in European leagues for 4 years. But I don't like it. I don't like it. And it is similar, but not exactly the same.
I feel like it's a little different because there are different levels. Like the college equivalent in Europe is technically professional the way it's set up. They're all feeder systems. I mean, just like Manchester United, your U squad, you're technically professional.
I don't want to talk about Manchester United right now.
Oh, well, sorry about that.
Oh, my gracious.
I have no idea what's going on with your guys. It's early. It's early.
I don't care, man. You don't lose to Hull 2-0 in the opening game. You just don't do it. Texter Dave gets in. If the rule is 5 for 5, how's Max Johnson playing for his seventh year for his fifth school? It's a very good point. The rule is 5 for 5. He played 2 years at LSU. He played 2 years at Texas A&M. He played 2 years at UNC. And now he's at Georgia Southern?
He was born July 25th of 2001.
That joker's 25 years old.
Yes, sir.
He played in 2000 for LSU and played a lot. Like, what are we doing, man? You're in your seventh year? I thought it was 5 for 5. How did he get a seventh one?
I mean, that broken leg. Was that the opener versus Minnesota? Something like that?
Yeah, at North Carolina.
That was give him whatever he wants. Give him that.
Just because he broke his leg?
Give him a big old bowl of ice cream,
all right,
too.
Was it a tib fib? Is it just tibia? Is this fibia? Tibula, fibula? How about toes? We going to give him for toes?
Paternal grandfather, maternal grandfather.
We doing femurs? What are we doing? Guy's going to his seventh year. His fourth team, by the way. LSU, A&M, North Carolina, Georgia Southern. He keeps falling down. From LSU to Texas A&M to North Carolina. A&M fans take offense to that. He just keeps falling down, though. Deshaun Watson apologizes. He gets a starting job. Yeah, Cleveland messed that thing up, too. Look, everybody's at fault here. The Cleveland fans are at fault. The Cleveland organization's at fault. And Deshaun Watson's at fault for the press conference and how all that worked out. He comes back yesterday and said, hey, I was emotional. I shouldn't have said it. But he's a starting quarterback there. I like how Todd Monken says, I don't care what you fans say. We're starting the best quarterback. And look, it won't go good. You're almost, if you're Deshaun Watson, you almost don't want to start because then you can go, man, I wouldn't have done as bad as Sanders. You know, it's that idea that you'd rather keep your mouth shut and people think you're an idiot than open it up and prove you are. You're going to prove the Cleveland people wrong. It won't go well. It's not going to go well at all. Bottom line is, lesser two evils, maybe? Sanders isn't very good either. case you just joined us, one quick preview before we get to Milt Lauter. Tonight, Braves Dodgers. Did we learn anything from the Braves on with what we just saw with Milwaukee? Milwaukee took 2 out of 3. That's a playoff team. Now the Braves and Dodgers. What they need to do is look at what they've done against all playoff teams. Because the Brewers' pitching was fantastic this weekend. Brewers gave up 6 runs. Of course, they only scored 8 in the 3-game set, taking 2 out of 3. Am I wrong in thinking this is a pretty big series? The Braves leads 3. Philadelphia lost last night, so it's 3.5.
Yeah, but, I mean, what, 31 games left?
Let's see here. So you're at 81. Hold on. I was trying to do it, and my computer messed up over here.
Either way, you want to have success against the Dodgers just because.
31.
Wow, I'm good. You got to have success against the Dodgers because that's who you're going to probably face with the World Series on the line.
Texas said they've done well. They beat the Dodgers and beat the Brewers earlier in the year. Let me look up first half and see how they did there. Mm-hmm.
The most important matchup for the Braves is, I mean, they got 7 games of the Phillies left.
Beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3 and beat Milwaukee 2 out of 3. So Milwaukee, they're 3-3 with Milwaukee right now, and they're up 2-1 over the Dodgers right now. But I just think the second half of where you are, where you're going, and it's kind of a big deal there. Looking at the final 31 outside of the Dodgers, you have Colorado for 3 at home, a makeup with San Francisco, 2 with Washington, the 4-game set at Philadelphia, Tampa at home, and then Philadelphia at home. And then the Cubs, that'll be a big series up with the Cubs. And Houston on the road, Cincinnati, and then you finish up with Miami on the road. So 31 games left. 1 month of the regular season basically left before we get to the playoffs. Let's take a break. We'll come back. A moment with Milt. Line up your questions. Dr. Milt Lauter loves our text line, Adams Grove text line, and you text in your questions to him. So if you have a sports or a performance psychology question, let's have a moment with Milt. From Amplus.com. Short break, much more on the other side. 864-859-8289. To our guest lines, a moment with Milt, Dr. Milt Lauter, sports and performance psychologist. Good morning, Dr. Lauter. How you doing?
Oh, Mickey, I couldn't have a better start in the morning. I'm out of here on the knoll at Mill Pine watching the sun come up. It's 63 degrees.
Mm.
It's a beautiful morning.
Mm. I meant to ask you, any stocked ponds at Mill Pine?
No, we're working on it. Okay. We've got to pass some legislation to be able to build a pond, but we're working on it.
All right. When you do, I want to be the first member of the fishing club at Mill Pine and go and pay my dues, pay my initiation fee, and pay my dues. And we promise we'll release everything. But I'm looking for a little private pond work there. Anyway, with that said, I got a very interesting text right off the bat with the text line here. And it's fairly long. Bear with me a little bit. How do I handle a bad attitude from a player as a Little League baseball coach? Don't want to discipline him too hard, but other players are watching. Don't want it to infiltrate the rest of the team, especially at this age. And I appreciate that one from 9212. It's a very interesting question. It's not your kid, so you got to be careful there. You want to make it fun, and I don't know what the age group he's talking about here, but
yeah,
I think
yeah,
he makes some really good points.
Age would matter.
Yeah.
Age would matter, and I think kind of, you know, there you got to get aligned with the parents, and I think that's hard to do sometimes in youth sports. But I think there's standards, values that you want to coach by, and especially what is a coach's job, especially at a young age, is enjoyment, fun, competitive attitude, spirit, let the kids know they can do difficult things. And I think it's okay. I mean, I've coached youth sports forever. I think it's okay to call them out. If there's a negative attitude or no effort, there was a little bit of accountability. You know, I've sat players, I've put players on the bench, I've pulled them out of the game because of a bad attitude. Now, you know, if the child's 6 or 7, that's different than the child's 10 or 12. But I think it's okay to have standards on your team no matter what age you're coaching. But then also understand, try to understand the player's heart. What is it, because he is so competitive, or because he cares so much about winning, because he tries so hard, and that leads a little bit of that negative attitude and that poor attitude? Or is he disrespectful to the coaches? Is he disrespectful to the other team? Is he disrespectful to his own players? I think how that attitude, one, what is the impetus for it? What's the motivation behind it? Why does it show up? Two, how does it show up? Does it show up towards the umpires, towards the coaches? Is it because of his own play? Then I think you kind of try to adjust the discipline appropriately. You know, have a talk with him and his parents. Paint a picture. I think that's what I try, like, what's important on your team? What do you want to watch when you watch them play? Are you proud of how they show up? How do you want them to compete? And the hardest part, I think, is modeling the behavior you want to see.
You mentioned painting a picture. I'm by myself last night. My head coach and my other coaches, they're all out of the country. They're playing golf. They're on vacations everywhere. And I got these 11, 8 and under kids, right? And so one of the things we did last night was we learned, all right, we just made the last out. Let's everybody sprint on the field to start the top of the inning. And then we got when we get a final out, we practiced sprinting off the field. And my thing was, now we look like a baseball team. In my head, that's what baseball looks like. We sprint off the field. We sprint on the field. That's pretty good stuff. How about the other side? And this is my question here. How about the other side of praising? We talk about criticizing it. I know we want to praise effort and not really success. Sometimes a growth mentality.
Attaboy, Mickey.
Yeah. See. See.
Yeah. And so
or even overpraising.
Well, the best way to shape behavior is positive reinforcement, right? Not negative reinforcement. You know, because the punishment, the person who delivers it usually has to be present for that to take place. So we've talked so much on your show about a growth mindset, and we talked the best way to catch it is catch people doing something right. So you reward effort. You shape the behavior of the other children. You can learn a growth mindset and develop self-efficacy vicariously by watching other people. And I think the most important thing we want to always talk about is how do we separate the player from the play. So we label the behavior, and we try really hard not to label the child.
All right. This is a scenario I have at practice last night, and that's one of the, again, this is my question. If you have a question for Dr. Louder on our Adams Garfield text line, 654-ROAR, 654-7627. I would say this, that maybe we need to, and you talked about this with your daughter and maybe even coach some of your teams. They tell us everything that we need to know about them. We just got to pay attention to them. And they show us, not just tell us, but they show us too. And you talk about ages. Like last night, I've got guys like, all right, you go, I'm not going to mention names, but you go to left center field, you go to left field, you go to the center field, and because you have four outfielders in this league. And, you know, little kid says, like, where's left field? And then we run out there without a glove. It's like, well, we're going to be playing defense. You're going to need your glove. Like, you can't assume. Because in your head, right, you think they know what you know or know what they should know. And I know you did this all throughout stages of it. But they're telling you, man, when you run out there without a glove, they're telling you, I need to know more stuff here, coach. You know?
Yeah, I think those – you know, I think, you know, I just recorded that last podcast with my daughter Emerson, and I tell a story there that was so profound for me through a father-daughter experience we had at J.H. Ranch that called the Trust Walk. And it kind of just gave me a glimpse into her heart that at 16 or 15, she needed me more than I thought. She was not quite as independent as I thought. She needed me to step in and be present. And so I think it's easy to put expectations on young people that are maybe not realistic with their development. And there's really nothing more stressful than for children than unrealistic expectations of what they have to do or how they should be, or like they need to be perfect. They need to have it figured out. And we forget that they kind of bloom in their own time. I think that's your own expectations of a coach. It's okay to be competitive. I'm very competitive. The game teams I coach, we were trying to win it. But coaching them and getting them the fundamentals, you're going to have different stages at different levels. You can't make the standard that your best player, your most talented athlete that you've coached since he was 3 years old and he knows everything about the game compared to a child who's showing up for his first practice ever and just got a glove.
Doc, you're going to love this. Before I get to the next question, we got a good question coming up. 2426 says, this guy's a genius. My favorite segment all week motivates me to be a better person every day.
You need to send that one to me. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. Now, this is from 8820. And let me take a stab at this one, and then please shoot me down on this if I'm wrong. 8820 says, how do you overcome negative criticism from your own father for most of your life? And I don't know how old 8820 is, but can I give a little answer? And it's probably the wrong answer, but and let you comment on this.
Sure.
As you know, I listen to Dr. Laura sometimes. I love Dr. Laura. She's.
I didn't know that about you, Mickey. Oh. I'm sorry.
She's. I like how she yells at the caller sometimes about, you're not listening to me. Anyway. So this lady calls in one time, and she says, my mother criticizes me, and has criticized me all my life. And Dr. Laura said, and I'm sure this is wrong, Dr. Laura said, how's your husband? He said, oh, I have a great husband. He said, how's your sisters, your siblings? Oh, they're great. He said, how's your health? He goes, my health is great. He said, well, how's your job? Said, I got a great job. How are your kids? Oh, they're wonderful. He goes, it's not Disney World. Who cares about your mom? Now, again, that's not the right answer, who cares about your mom, but there's a lot of other great things going on. They're focused on the one bad of this thing. How far off am I, Doc, here? The dad's criticized most of his life. That's
You're
a hard
not too deal. Far off, because gratitude is a great antidote to a lot of ills and stresses and frustrations in our life. And so what Dr. Laura was saying, I can't believe we're talking about Dr. Laura, is can I be grateful for what I have? But you also, Mickey, can't minimize other people's pain. And so the wounds of a father run very deep. And it's so hard to overcome, because it shapes a picture. The person who's supposed to love you the most and build you up the most is actually the one who broke you down. Mm. Now, as you get older and mature, the hardest part is accepting the things you cannot control. And if the father's still alive, my guess is he isn't going to change. And you can't change the words that were spoken and the criticism that you received. What you can do is choose forgiveness. And Lewis Mead says, forgiveness is where that person or that event doesn't control you. And then Jesus tells us it's 70 times 7. What that means to me is every time I think about the pain, every time I think about the hurt, that I choose forgiveness, not so much for my father, but for me.
Yeah.
That's what releases me. That's what gives me freedom. And so forgiveness is the first part. The second part is challenge the lies that maybe your father said. What evidence do you have or do those words have in your life? Is there any truth that there's still evidence? And that's where Dr. Laura came in and talked about being grateful for who you are and what you have, and not let the things you can't control control you, to not let your past shape your future, that the difference between a reaction and a response is we can't control the things that are happening to us. That's a reaction. It's okay to be negative and hurt, especially from somebody that loves us so much or supposed to love us so much. But being human beings, we get to choose our response, that we get to choose how we want to move forward, that we are not going to let that define us or shape us or control us or hold us back from being who we want to be or who we were created to be.
The best part of Dr. Laura is when she starts yelling at callers and they'll say, Dr. Laura, I don't want to take my, I don't want to get a divorce, but he's cheating on me. She said, well, divorce him. Yeah, but you're not listening to me. Divorce him. and said, but I do love that. No, we're not doing that. Anyway, I have one more, and this is a great one. This is from 8074. And I press the last thing says he's 9. All right. But I go back to the first part of it. My son is committed to perfect practice to a fault. How do I get him out of his own head when he misses a fly ball or overthrows the first baseman as a 9-year-old?
Yeah, that perfection is so hard, right? It's such an enemy of progress, and it takes away the joy. And I think you just start looking for examples of other people that struggle. I mean, to watch other people, I think sometimes at 9 years old, you kind of give them examples of how people respond to adversity and how his favorite baseball player handles setbacks or defeats or striking out. I think you also kind of get into that heart a little bit. You know, I don't know where he is in the birth order. That firstborn usually carries a lot of that anxiety and a lot of that perfectionism. They're looking around the room and they're trying to see how they measure up. And so understanding, and at nine, that brain is starting to bump a little bit, and so you can get some conversations and understand what's going in his going through his head. What is he really thinking? And my guess is there's a thought in there that what he has to do or how he should be or how he needs to be, and if he's not, then he doesn't feel really good about himself. You got to start challenging, back to that earliest call, you got to start challenging that lie a little bit earlier. And if he makes a mistake, make sure you're responding the right way.
The texture,
my dad used to.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
The texture adds that he's the second born, but the most athletic is what he added after that.
Yeah, so potential adds tons of pressure.
Yeah.
And the potential, like he's so athletic, he in his own mind, and he's probably been built up for his athletic talent. That potential adds pressure. That he thinks he should be better. That he maybe he's playing up, and he has to prove himself, because maybe his identity already at age nine is that he's the most athletic child in the family. He kind of knows that, and he has value in that, and he doesn't want to let anybody down.
One of the things I did with my niece Isabella, who you know very well, when she was early on, she's a perfectionist, high achieving. There's a lot of negative that comes with some of those things, and you know that. But one of the things I did was we sat down on YouTube one time and watched all of Tiger Woods' bad shots. It's like, here's a guy that you see the fist pumping and you see the great putts and the great chip-ins all the time on highlight films, but he hit a bad shot to hit it to miss the green. You know, like this is the greatest player to ever pick up the stick, maybe. And he hits bad shots every single round, and it's okay. So
yeah, when we're young, we don't see the failures of others, especially in this day and age of social media. We just see the successes. And we think this is what it takes to be really great. And it's not that you don't make mistakes. It's how you respond to those and how do you let those shape you or define you.
Tell me about Amplus.com, the growth project, 10 for 12, all the great services, Millpine. There's a lot of great things going on where you can help these good folks.
Yeah, Mickey, I got to give a shout-out to my boy Arthur down the street. His dad said they would be listening this morning, so I want to make sure I do that. So I appreciate them listening. But I'm at Millpine today. We have our 10 for 12 group, which is an awesome experience. We've already got some people signed up for next year. And so that's an opportunity to try to engage people and teach some of the lessons we really believe in. The Growth Project is a podcast. I think Drew Brandon and Mike Radinsky, an AI expert, are breaking down the psychology behind AI and how do we embrace it and not be fearful of it. And so we're just continuously looking for ways to hopefully inspire others to be better, pursue better. And your show, I really value your listeners, and I appreciate our time. And we got to get you away from Dr. Laura just a little bit here in that process.
You're so much kinder to me than she is to the phone calls. That's what I do appreciate that.
All right. Well, I hope I'm not like her, because she makes it all about her. So
it's
all about me.
Oh, it is. It is. All right, go ahead. I'm the charter member of the Millpine Fishing Club, and let me know what my dues on initiation fee are. Have a great one, Doctor. Enjoy this great morning.
Yes, sir. See you, Mickey.
Thank you, Doc. Dr. Milt Louder, Amplus.com. We'll come back, open phone calls for the rest of the show after this. I have a thought. I want to switch gears. Look, in case you're just joining us, LSU's taking another NFL guy, and I complained about it for an hour. And LSU basketball is taking all foreigners and all 25-year-old professional players. And I complained about that for an hour. And Dylan Hunter's back at Clemson. I complained about that for an hour. And I can do that and get you caught up on the latest quotes. And SEC, by the way, the SEC says you shouldn't have pro athletes. The SEC said it best. College athletes, not former professional athletes, have been at the heart of the Southeastern Conference. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and compete professionally should not then be permitted to return to college competition. This is a joint statement from the SEC and their presidents. They go on to say, allowing that to occur will blur the line between college and professional sports, create significant competitive equity concerns, and reduce opportunities for high school and current college athletes. College sports are for college athletes. The current confusion around the national eligibility standards emphasizes the need to advance the Protect College Sports Act. That's something we hadn't talked about now. Now here's who sues. I'm going off. I said I wasn't going to talk about it. I'm talking about it. If you're a high school guy now, and you're not one of the guys making $2 million in high school. Now you see this? Guys making over $2 million in high school.
absolutely ludicrous.
But why not? What's different? Seriously, what's different in high school and college? They're both academic institutions.
You could say that, you could falsely say that people are paying and making money off of your college team.
But they're making money off your high school team, too.
And the people who are paying you to come to their school aren't being financially compensated by ratings and things like that. So, yeah, it is. It's about the same.
Okay. Why not Little League Baseball?
It gets a lot more eyes than some high school football teams.
I'm going to say, again, I'm going over all that. Anyway, here's the next lawsuit. If you're a high school kid or if you're a college player and you get beaten out by a guy that was a professional coming back, sue! I mean, your opportunity is taken away from you. I could have made more NIL dollars. Why did y'all let this happen when y'all said it wasn't going to happen? Now you do this, and now all of a sudden, my opportunity is taken away from me. It's all about me and mine. So go ahead and sue that. Anyway, I want to switch gears. I beat that dead horse, and it's not changing. It will get changed. We will get some control. It won't be like it was. But we will have a little at some point in time here, and I'm hopeful sooner rather than later that that's going to happen. And I can all come back. We're dying to come back, man. We're dying to feel good about it. We want to feel good about it. We want to dive head first into it and get back to the way it was. We want to be the fans we once were, but we're being forced out. We're being told we can't. We're being told that – did you see the SEC shorts?
Oh, yeah.
You see the latest one?
No, I have not.
All right. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. But SEC shorts, I hope you're familiar with it. Their big spoof yesterday was, let's try to name who's on your roster. Florida named four players, and it's a game show. And the people can't, and the guy's like, oh, this guy? No, he transferred out. Who's your starting quarterback? Missouri. I don't know. Oh, the guy from Ole Miss. And they're making fun of it, but really it's true. Fans, if you don't know who's on your team or how long they're going to be on your team or what number they are, where they came from, that's making it more difficult on fans, and they're making fun of it, but it's true. So keep killing the golden goose. But I do want to shift gears quickly, and we'll talk about this the next hour. I would have never thought I'd say this, but – It's so much easier to be a head coaching opportunity now than it used to be. And you look around all of college football and you're seeing head coaches are like, wait a minute, what? How's that guy a head coach? Like you used to have to be a GA for 4 years and then you went and worked at Louisiana Monroe for three. So you're 7 years in now. And then you went and worked at Arkansas State for two, and now you're 9 years in. And then you got to be – then you went to Kansas for 2 years. Now you're 11 years in. And now you're 33 years old. And then you got a job at Georgia Tech for six, and now you're 39 years old. And then you got a job at Florida – for four, and now you're 43 years old. And then you got to be, or you want to be a coordinator, so you got to go back down and be a coordinator at Kansas again because you made some pressure there. And you're a coordinator there for 3 years. Now you're in your mid-40s. And then you got to be a coordinator at back up one more step back to Georgia Tech and then back up to Florida again. So you work, now you're 50. And then you get to be a head coach at James Madison. And then you got to be a head coach at Kansas State, then you got to be head coach at Florida. Now you're 60-something. I'm looking around now. Stanford hired a guy who's 39 years old. He was playing quarterback at Stanford 2009. The first time he became – he was running back coach at Stanford in 2013. And the only other place he was, he went to be the coordinator, I mean, the quarterback's coach for the Commanders for 3 years. And now he's head coach at Stanford. Oh, by the way, the Lupoy, Tosh Lupoy, I think he's going to do a good job. Hey, that's a different deal. He was at Cal and at Washington and at Alabama and with the Browns and the Falcons and the Jaguars and Oregon. Like, he's been around. I think he'll do a good job. But you look up and down like college football now, and young guys getting – in the NFL too. Same thing NFL. NFL, we're hiring younger and younger and younger.
Mike McDaniels, Sean McVay, when he was hired at least.
Yeah, you just go – you don't have to have a whole lot of experience now. Like, you just – you can be a college football coach or head coach in college, head coach in pros. You can be 32 years old, like be at one or two places, and that's it. That's all you need. And it really is interesting to see just how easy it is. Now, with that, it's going to come mistakes. Colin Klein, the new head coach at Kansas State, he played at Kansas State. He was a GA at Kansas State. Then he went to Northern Iowa as a quarterback coach. Came back to Kansas State as a quarterback coach, left for A&M for a year, but he's only been at two places. And now he's a head coach at 36 years old. We'll continue that thought. Love for you to come back. Hour number three when you return after a very short top of the hour break.